They don't cry, Stacey. They absolutely don't cry. Big boys don't cry. Big girls don't cry. Yeah, that is Stacey Fergie Ferguson. Now, you might know her as Fergie Ferg from the Black Eyed Peas. She is 45 today. This is part of the fun of what's going on in the world of sport. We get to find out all this stuff that's happened on this day. Fergie Ferg, part of the Black Eyed Peas, went solo for a couple of albums. A big solo album, which I know you've got in the cupboard, Whitey, The Duchess, would have been your favourite.
Of course, yes.
Glamorous was another one of her solo hits, but Big Girls Don't Cry. Actually, I saw this film clip yesterday. They were going through some retro stuff, and I saw this film clip. Lovely voice, Fergie Ferg. Love you long time. That's one of the lines in her other songs. But she's 45 today, Stacey, so happy birthday to Stace. And remember, Big Girls Don't Cry. Neither does Phil Murphy, host of ESPN Sports Center, who joins us on The Breakfast Club on a Friday morning. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning, boys. I'm in tears without sports, so I'm trying to keep it together over here.
How do you get through your day, Phil?
Well, for lunch today, I baked some bacon. you know, I've taken on a new hobby. We have two dogs at home, and we love them. And the puppy is very destructive with the older one's toys, so I've started sewing back together dog toys. And I actually just posted about it on my Twitter maybe an hour ago. So that's a new hobby I have. And then just, you know, relentlessly going through headlines looking for some glimmer of hope or light at the end of the tunnel. We can get a date that we can resume sport. But it doesn't feel like we've gotten that yet.
No, well, there you go, Phil. I do pretty much exactly the same thing as you do, looking for those that glimmer of hope. What's it like living in America at the moment? Because, you know, we're obviously getting television reports, you know, across from where you are at the moment, it does look scary. What's it like living through it?
Yeah, I mean, the town in which I live, it seems like business is normal. It feels like a weekend day that I'm, you know, not working and just kind of have a few things on the to-do list. But again, I live about 2 hours from New York City, and having spoken with friends who live there and in Los Angeles, it's a completely different tone there. I mean, my wife and I went for a walk today in our neighborhood, which we're able to do. I mean, all the local businesses are shut down, but we can go for a walk, and you see somebody walking by, you just wave, and you don't really necessarily stop to have a chat. So it's kind of a normal day. In cities that are more congested, that are more reliant on public transportation, it's a completely different tone, and that's where I think, you know, and again, that's where our media centers are. Non-sport media centers are in the bigger cities like that. So that's where there feels to be more of just like the shadow and the ominous nature of all of this, specifically in New York City. I mean, they are 10 times hit harder than any other U.S. area. New York State, it has 10 or 12 more times cases than any other of the 50 other U.S. states. So it's scary there, but it just feels here, you know, we're quietly waiting, practicing the social distancing and the physical distancing and just riding it out.
What about the athletes, Phil? I saw Ben Simmons, of course, who we spent a bit of time talking about here from an Australian sports perspective, tweeted yesterday that I missed this game. He had a photo of himself in his 76ers jersey, and I missed this game. What are they getting up to, and what's their sort of feedback through this time?
Well, it kind of varies by athlete. A lot of them are looking into ways to keep their brand high profile and taking on other hobbies on social media. Maybe having conversations in different spaces, whether it's movie reviews. I've seen some of that. I've seen some people, you know, flexing their cooking acumen if they're able to. And many of them have, you know, some kind of training facility in their house. I mean, this is an American sport thing, but Kevin De Bruyne of Manchester City, I saw, you know, he had some little kids on his legs, and he was doing some leg extensions. And you know, Cam Newton posted a workout this morning of him in his house, you know, some self-motivation after the Panthers released him the other day. So you're seeing a lot of that, guys trying to stay physically fit and just keep their minds active. I mean, these athletes, it's what they do. It's a measure of normalcy for them. Plus, I think it's probably a little cathartic to get out there and get some sweat going and just, you know, beat themselves up a little bit, just as almost a means of therapy to kind of make it through the day. And then others, again, are just enjoying the alone time and the family time. Joe Ingles of the Jazz, you know, posted the other day that if it meant keeping his son safe, he would never pick up a basketball again. Now, it doesn't seem like that's the case, but it just highlights for him the priority of family time, which he's getting now. So, I mean, the athletes, similar to us, are just trying to remain optimistic and hopeful. And I think once we get through the next week or two and some semi-accurate dates of renewal can be published, I think that'll just lift everybody's spirits and get us looking forward to the day when sport can return. It's just, as of right now, it's a little bit hard to balance because, just frankly, we don't have that yet.
We're having conversations here, Phil, in our sports, but probably the AFL and NRL more so than the others because they're the two biggest in the country, about the balance of spending and that type of thing, and how much money we've spent in programs and how many people have been involved as part of AFL clubs and NRL clubs through the journey, and whether or not that's going to look the same going forward. Now, you've got a different model over there with private ownership, but will it change what sporting clubs look like, do you think, this?
It's really difficult to tell. And you know, I was reading with the NRL, what, something like $13 million per round that each club would lose by not playing, which is why, you know, to me, why that league went on for so long. And with the private ownership in the U.S., you're seeing some of these businesses and some of these owners putting their practical business interests forward, you know, saying, hey, we're going to cut back staff or furlough the employees. And then these players themselves, the players on those teams, are stepping up and saying, no, I'll pay this person's salary if they can keep their job. And then the billionaire owner backtracking. So there's a lot that's going on in the court of public opinion here right now, too. And it just seems like every week, whether it's the Boston Celtics this week or the ownership group that owns the Sixers and the New Jersey Devils are cutting back salaries or asking people to use paid vacation or unpaid vacation for this time. That's where it's starting to, you're seeing the effects. As far as free agency and those types of things, the NFL has not slowed down. It seems like teams are spending as they would normally. They're the highest profile sport in their off season. I think if this is to stretch out into August, September, where the NBA may have to compromise their finals, or Major League Baseball, I saw a proposal today for Major League Baseball, which normally has a 162-game season, for that to be reduced to just 32 games before playing postseason, which would be delayed as it is, that's where I think you could see some teams really handicapped financially and spending being affected. But right now, it's too early to prognosticate. And for the one sport where we could get a read, the NFL, it's their offseason anyway. So the only thing you're really seeing with them is limited ability to evaluate draft picks and the inability to have players conduct physicals before signing them in free agency. But there's been no shortage of free agent news to this point, so it doesn't seem like that's been affected all that much.
Since we last spoke to you, Phil, it's all been confirmed about Tom Brady going to the Buccaneers, and I think a lot of people were kind of, and me included, kind of hoping that it was some sick joke and that he would remain at the Patriots. Now it's starting to sink in. How is it being received over there?
Well, it's the biggest splash in the NFL offseason in some time. I mean, it was a pretty quick close to the deal for the Buccaneers. It went on as, you know, the Patriots were getting kind of even odds in the punter's markets as far as where he would land, and then every other team was basically split. Some people thought the Dolphins or the Chargers because they're in a major market. Tampa Bay came on out of nowhere, and I think a lot of it has to do with the respect that Tom Brady has for their head coach, Bruce Arians, and their ability to add some pieces around him. Now, the Bucs did look at Melvin Gordon, who ultimately ended up at the Broncos. They couldn't close the deal there, but they brought back Ndamukong Suh. They have a nice little nucleus around them, and this is a team that, with a quarterback who threw 30 interceptions last season in Jameis Winston, they were still 7-9, and they were on the cusp of the playoffs. Now with an expanded postseason format and Brady locked in there for 2 years, there are a lot of people thinking this is a 10, 11, potentially 12-win team. The New Orleans Saints are going to be a good squad. The Falcons are trying to improve and build, and you think the Panthers in that division are going to regress a little bit. So for me, I would say a good over-under for the Bucs in terms of wins is 10 or 11, and that puts them in position for playoffs. And in any single elimination format, it's a very short list of quarterbacks that I would take before Tom Brady. So you're going to see a lot of media coverage in Tampa Bay as the season ultimately gets going, and I think it'll be justified. I think they're going to be a very competitive club.
Before I let you go, the impact of the Olympics not being here from an American sports perspective, we've obviously got heaps of athletes that are very, very disappointed, and heaps of athletes that are saying, well, this is good. It gives me a bit more time to get myself sorted. What's the reaction over there from the US athletes?
very much the same. In the summer games, the athletics and the swimming teams are our strongest representatives in terms of individual sport, and they were among the first to call to the IOC to have things postponed a year, just because so many of these athletes train in these major media markets where gyms are closed down. There's no way for them to get the proper training and to peak at the right time for an Olympic Games. So I think for them, there was a sense of relief. You know, for the athletes who were on the opposite side of 30, you know, for them, if making a field in 2020 was already going to be a stretch with going up against not just the clock, but Father Time, you know, pushing it back a year is less than ideal. But just in the circumstances now, unless you're a long-distance runner or you're going for a run around your neighborhood as you're training, there would have been no way to properly train for these games to have the kind of interaction with coaches and if it's a team sport, teammates as needed. So I think we see it was a sad development that the games couldn't happen, but it's understandable, and I think people here are just optimistic for the fact that it does appear that we will get a summer games, at least as it stands. It will be 2021, but the U.S. athletes will be at their best. And personally, I was scheduled to go to the 2020 games in Tokyo, so from a professional standpoint, it was a little disappointing for me to have, you know, all of this rise up. But again, I will feel much safer, you know, getting on an international flight a year from now than I would have in the middle of July.
Yep. Sounds about right to me, I reckon. Well played in the end by everyone involved. Phil, always great to chat, mate. So hopefully the dog's not chewing too much. You don't get too busy sewing up the toys. And we look forward to seeing more photos on Twitter in the next couple of weeks. Good luck, buddy.
Keeps me occupied. Thanks so much, boys. Enjoy the weekend when you get there.
Will do. You too. Phil Murphy, host of ESPN Sports Center and